The National Broadcasting Company presents Clifton Utley's commentary on the news. Here is Mr. Utley speaking from Chicago.
Good evening. Recent statements of top public officials and the general course of world events have so substantially heightened tensions and increased war affairs that I want right at the start tonight to point out those dangers that do and those that do not confront us. It is important to realize that there is little danger that a full-scale shooting war will break out either now or at any time in the immediately visible future. The very real danger that does exist is that events may, or at least might, take place in the next few months, which would so change the whole world picture, and which once they took place would be so irrevocable that they would make war unavoidable at some future, later time, perhaps 5, perhaps 10 years hence. This is what some of our top officials mean when they talk currently about the situation being very grave and increasingly serious. To show why they quite correctly think this, I would like to violate the old copybook maxim and tonight deliberately cross some bridges before we come to them, and indeed bridges I hope that we will never reach. I do this not because I like to borrow trouble from the future, but because unless we are aware of the worst things that might happen to us as a nation and then take deliberate steps to keep them from happening, well, if we don't take preventive measures, the worst will happen. We should start with the perfectly frank realization that at the present time, it is Russia, and not ourselves, who is winning the Cold War. Russia has taken Czechoslovakia. She will grab Finland at pleasure. The Italian situation right now is very shaky. None can predict how the mid-April elections in Italy will come out. Some, in the last 2 or 3 days, think the Italian outlook is perhaps slightly better. But any informed person is perfectly aware that there is a very distinct possibility, and some would call it a probability, that Moscow will get Italy after the April elections by a combination of election gains, governmental stagnation as a result of those gains, communist infiltration into the government, and from there on the Czechoslovakian story all over again. Suppose Italy falls. Look eastward first. Greece. There are many who denounce the Truman Doctrine, who claim it has failed. It certainly has not worked the way we would have liked to have it. The Greek government that has stayed in power under it, well, even the most sympathetic observer could hardly claim that Greek government was a paragon of democracy. Yet when everything has been said, it is a fact that Greece has been spared the fate of Czechoslovakia. Greece has not been pulled behind the Iron Curtain, and there is still a chance for free will to play its part in determining Greece's future. But let Italy fall. Can you then really believe that it would be much chance of keeping Greece from being seized by Soviet totalitarianism? Greece already has the Soviet cat's paws scratching at her from her Bulgarian, Yugoslav, and Albanian borders. Put communist control to the west of her in Italy. Well, you can see what in all likelihood would result. And let Greece follow Italy behind the Iron Curtain. Can you then really hope that Iran, where things have always been pretty shaky, or Turkey would survive? And if you admit they probably wouldn't, then you concede the whole Middle East position is gone, or would be gone. The oil of the Near and Middle East would be gone. And what the United Nations would then decide to do about Palestine would at best be a very academic matter, with the vital strategic points of the Near and Middle East passing under the control of Soviet fascism. Now turn west from Italy, to France. France has made a valiant effort to come back this winter. Her progress under Premier Schuman has been great. I do not say that if Italy passed under control of Soviet totalitarianism that France would be irrevocably lost. There would be many who would fight against it, and they might win. But it is an unquestioned fact that once Italy should be lost, the position of an independent France becomes much more difficult. Though there are recent enemies, there is already today a close bond between Italy and France. Free, democratic France counts on working toward a customs union with Italy as a means of strengthening France's future economy. Of course, any such union would be impossible if Italy were communist and France were democratic. In addition, there would be the infiltration influence over the Franco-Italian frontier, and note that infiltration through which Moscow would seek to introduce further subversion in France. That infiltration would come at the geographical part of France where democratic stability is most precarious and where balance could be most easily lost. I refer, of course, to the south of France industrial region centering around Marseille, which has always been heavily communist and which now, referring specifically to the city of Marseille, has a communist mayor in the city council. Let's leave it at this. With a communist-controlled Italy on its southeast border, a France trying to avoid Soviet domination would find its task doubly difficult and would require much greater aid from others, most notably from us, to survive as a free nation. And even then, it might not be able to do so. Now look northward. We all know that Moscow can write her own ticket on Finland. The Finns might refuse to sign the ticket, in which case there just wouldn't be any more Finland. Russian armies would take over. Or Finland might sign on the line, in which event there might be no Finland either. The position of Finland today is like that of any one of us held up by a bandit who, with a gun at our head, finds the bandit telling us to hand over our billfold. We hand it over to keep from being shot. Then maybe the bandit shoots us anyhow. Realistically, we must, indeed we have, already written Finland off. But beyond Finland, you have Sweden and Norway and Denmark. Once Finland is gone, the heat is directly on them in any case, but if the whole Mediterranean position should have gone first, as I've shown it might, then think of the psychological pressure on Norway, Sweden, and Denmark. Could you expect them, either materially or psychologically, to hold out very long in such circumstances? Well, write your own answer. And remember that if Scandinavia should go, either Iceland and Greenland might well go with it, with all the menace to the security of our continental United States that would result from these islands being in unfriendly hands. Or, alternately, to prevent that from happening, we might well have to jump in and seize these islands by force. Now, I know there'll be many who will say that this catalog of possible future events is just too fantastic, and that all these things together, well, they just can't happen. Why not? If anyone 3 years ago had drawn up a list of things that have already happened today, wouldn't that list 3 years ago, back in 1945, have looked just as fantastic as the list I've suggested tonight? If all these things did happen, though, where would we then be? We'd be well along on the road to the domination of all Europe by one strong and aggressive nation. And history has shown that whenever one strong, aggressive nation seizes all Europe, we, the United States, do become involved in war. History has shown that twice in the 20th century. It follows, then, that in the interest of peace, the United States must do whatever is necessary to strengthen the forces of freedom everywhere, but at the moment, particularly in Italy, because Italy is most immediately threatened. Perhaps freedom will win in Italy in April, perhaps not. Only time will tell. If Italy survives as a free nation, our task of defending American security and the likelihood of lasting peace will be the greater. But if Italy falls in April or after, what then? Certainly the outlook is darker. But even then, the battle for peace is not irrevocably lost. Granted, Italy and Czechoslovakia are both important, both industrially and strategically. Granted also, for strategic and psychological reasons, that the loss of Italy might indeed in all likelihood would be followed by some or all of the other possible losses I've mentioned. Granted all this, it would still be true that the most important industrial producing mechanism in Europe, namely the Ruhr, the Rhineland, the Saar, French Lorraine, Belgium, the Netherlands, and, of course, off the coast of continental Europe, the great producing mechanism of the British Isles, these most important industrial areas would still not be under immediate Soviet control, though they would be very sorely menaced. And it is also true that whatever else she may get, Russia, without this great West European industrial producing area, would remain for a very considerable time would remain what Russia has always been, a backward agricultural nation in the early stages of industrialization, lacking the industrial force to support a major war for the domination of the world. Now then, where does that leave us? It leaves us with a first interest in supporting Italy, supporting freedom in Italy. Second, should that prove unavailing, our last major bastion that must be defended, if there's to be any chance of long-run avoidance of a major shooting war, our last major bastion is the industrial heartland of Western Europe. That our country is increasingly aware of this is quite clear from last night's Senate vote of 69-17 in favor of the $5.3 billion Marshall Plan. Quite simply, that represents a revolution in American thinking. 2 years ago, when we were arguing about whether we should or should not let Britain have a loan, who would have dreamed that anything like the full Marshall Plan would command a 69-17 Senate majority in March of 1948? This great change has come about not because we Americans have changed in any essential respect. It has come about because great historical forces have been at work, which have changed the situation in which millions of Americans have found themselves. History has confronted us with new alternatives, and we, the same people as before, have simply chosen the most desirable of the alternatives available to us. Now, if this broadcast has shown anything, it has shown, I believe, that history at the present time has by no means come to a full stop. The historic forces are still very much at work. They will move us farther still. They will move us far beyond the Marshall Plan into a political equivalent of the Marshall Plan. And that political equivalent of the Marshall Plan, in all likelihood, will be in the form of a guarantee of direct military aid to Western Europe against aggression. This will happen because it will be increasingly recognized as time passes that only if the nations most imminently threatened by aggression, only if these nations are given the assurance that they can count on military aid if they resist with force, only then are they likely to resist aggression and infiltration with full effectiveness. And only if they do that, only then is there much chance that the Marshall Plan can bring about the recovery that Europe must have to survive. Now, how this will come about, I cannot say. Perhaps the five Western European nations, now setting up the beginnings of a European Union, will appeal to us for a reinsurance guarantee against aggression, arguing that without it, their efforts cannot be effective. Perhaps some other factor, it could be a Soviet grab of Italy, Greece, or Scandinavia, might provide the required prodding. Or perhaps it will be something else still. All one can say is that the inexorable historical forces are at work, in time, and in all likelihood, sooner rather than later, they will exert their controlling influence. To the doubters, whose numbers I am fully aware will at this moment be legion, to the doubters, I say again, if anyone, during the summer of 1945, had predicted that the United States Senate in mid-March of 1948 would vote 69-17 to make a virtual gift of $5.3 billion to 16 European nations, what would you have said then? Once again, perhaps that's your answer. Good night.
You have heard Clifton Utley's commentary on the news. Mr. Utley is heard each Sunday night at this time from the NBC newsroom in Chicago. This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.